Going Linux, episode 461, Linux and Open Source Current Events.
Get your tech on, it's time to roll. Plug your cords in and take control. Say goodbye to the old routine. Linux is here, it's the future machine. No virus.
Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, you can email us at goinglinux@gmail.com, or you can send us a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, Linux and Open Source Current Events.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, Larry. It's been a while.
It has been a while. And, you know, I don't know how current these current events are going to be by the time we get this episode released, but we'll take a shot at it. Both you and I have been tremendously busy with life, and as a result, we haven't had a lot of time to devote to the podcast, but we thought we would give it a shot here with a current events episode.
Yeah, I know we had been following, trying to get back to our kind of our old cadence, but real life has really been kicking our butts lately, especially at work for both of us. And I'm basically working 7 days a week right now, and that's going to probably go on for another month or two. So, and you're just about as busy as I am. So we haven't had time. So, you know, when we do have a few free moments, we're going to try to record something, but we will get back to our normal cadence. But we just want to let you know we're not dead. We're just super busy.
Yeah, life gets in the way.
Yeah. We're finally, I think, through the hottest part of the year, and it's starting to cool off, thank goodness. So that's the weather report. And, you know, I'm still running NixOS on my old machine, and still running Bazite. I did test out a few that I'll mention later on. I just haven't had time to really distro hop. I know it's weird. It's been sitting on my machine for almost a month and a half, and it's still running. So it's like, wow, you know, new world record there. So
yeah,
I just been working and going home and sleeping. So you know, I wanted to go over some of the current events in the open source and Linux, just because it's been kind of a busy year so far, especially when I'm sitting there at work listening to podcasts, going, "Oh my goodness," or you know, hearing the latest news. So the first story I thought was, I put it in there because I like Linus Torvalds. And he was talking about AI in Linux. And the article was written in the techadvocate.org. I put a link in the show notes so people could go read it. But, you know, I just love how he's just kind of, if you've never heard him, he's kind of very just matter-of-fact blunt. And sometimes he comes across as kind of crass. So I kind of enjoy him because he's from Finland. So he's kind of still got that mentality. And so, basically, Linus says that he thinks AI can help with, like, enhanced bug detection and fixing. You know, I'll help optimize the performance of the kernel and automated documentation. And then, in the same talk, he was talking about having the Rust programming language in the kernel. So, on the AI part, he was saying, yeah, it can really help with this, but we need to make sure that humans are overseeing this, because, and he basically said, the only thing that really matters is Linux, He doesn't care about the AI, what's being used in AI. He's like, I only care about the kernel because that's what he does.
Yep. Yeah, so exactly.
He's not against using some of this stuff. He just, you know, he's like, but he's saying, you know, we got to make sure that the humans are actually doing the work and keep an eye on it.
Right.
He said, but we can use this AI or large language models to help with documentation, and maybe, you know, it can detect a bug that people are missing. And, you know, he had a thing about the Rust programming language in the kernel, and he's not against it, but he's just saying that a lot of the kernel developers are write it in C. And he says that's not going to change, because he says they're not going to take these old gray beards and have them relearn everything for Rust. He says Rust can be used in the kernel as a test, you know, as part of it, but it's not going to be the primary language. And so, because a lot of people have been saying, can you rewrite the whole thing in Rust? And he's like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, no. So he said it will be assistive, you know, but not. It's not, you know, he'll pull in the information, you know, stuff in Rust, but, you know, he's not going to say you have to write everything in Rust. You know, it's like we've been writing this thing in C, and it's only what, like, I think he said like 28 million lines of code. You can do this instantly, you know, no problem. Maybe we can get AI to do it. Sure. So what do you think about that?
There you go. Well, I can't comment on the use of Rust, but I can say that it kind of makes sense, his position on it. Why fix something that's not broken? You rewrite it in Rust. Now you've got a whole bunch of stuff that you've introduced as new bugs that you didn't have before, and blah, blah, blah. So I understand his position on that. I also agree with his position that you have to use AI with caution. I think it's gotten blown out of proportion in the media. I think there is some validity to being concerned about the hallucinations that AI can have and their impact on people who don't realize that they're getting bad information from AI. On the other hand, people get bad information from social media and rely on that. So how much worse could it get? I don't know. But anyway, so, you know, you have to use AI with caution. And in addition, you need to be vigilant of what it's telling you and take what the AI is giving you with a grain of salt and check it. Make sure it's not giving you bad advice or bad information, and even optimizing the performance of things or automating documentation, that's all got to be fact-checked and checked for accuracy with the use of human eyeballs. And, getting humans to provide the feedback on, is this right or is this not? Yeah, can we do without some of the repetitive text that AI is, that I've noticed that AI gives you, and make this even more succinct, even though that's one of the things that you use AI to do, is compress things a little bit. You might want to run it through the AI filter a couple of times. But if you're using AI to summarize, you're using AI to help with the information from a large language model that you control and you don't let it go out to the internet to look for stuff, then I think you're in good shape. But you still need to check what it's doing, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what he's saying. You know, Linus is, he's pragmatic.
I noticed in the photo from the article that he does not have two fingers up like he had in one of the discussion he had with NVIDIA.
Yes.
But anyway, if you don't know what that's all about, just go look for it. Linus Torvalds, NVIDIA.
He's not their biggest fan.
Exactly. Anyhow, shall we move on?
Yeah, we shall.
Okay, so our next topic is PopOS Cosmic Desktop is in alpha. Well, actually, I think it's been released by the time we get this. I think it's been released already, hasn't it?
No, it's in alpha. I downloaded.
It's still in alpha?
Yeah, I downloaded the alpha. Of course I did. And put it on a USB stick and played with it.
PopOS is developed by System 76. It's a distribution of Linux. And this is what System 76 has listed about the new Cosmic Desktop that's going to be a key component of PopOS going forward. As a whole, Cosmic is a comprehensive operating system graphical user interface environment that features advanced functionality and a responsive design. Its modular architecture is specifically designed to facilitate the creation of unique branded user experiences with ease.
I love marketing speak. I really do.
Yeah.
That's so great. So I downloaded it just last night because I got home and I was cooking dinner. So I want to see what it looks like. So I downloaded it, put it on a USB and booted it and played around with it. I didn't have any issues. I mean, it really, really did run really fast. It's not done, but I could have put it on my machine and used it, and not going to run alpha software, but for my daily driver. But I didn't see anything that would be a game breaker. I mean, everything run great, and I think it only used, if I remember correctly, it was like 2.3 gigabytes of, and I had browsers open and, was just multiple tabs and it didn't have any issues. So, of course, it's based on Ubuntu. So this will be an LTS version. I think it's really, really going to be a pleasant experience. They're going to add some new apps and stuff. They just took the old GNOME and they've just totally written from scratch, and they're adding stuff that they wanted, like the tiling and additional programs and the theming. And if you were looking at both of them and you didn't know the difference, I don't think you'd notice too much. You might notice a more performant of the Cosmic. So I'm kind of anxious to see how it turns out in the end. But right now it looks like PopOS. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense that they would develop their own GUI or desktop environment, because then they have control over what it is they add to it, what it is they want it to do, and how it works. So I understand that. They're trying to make their own Linux distribution, and this is a great way to do it. So more power to them. I haven't downloaded the alpha. I have taken a look at some of the reviews online, and from what I can see, you're right. There are very few, if any, new functions that they've added, but it'll certainly give them the opportunity to add more in the future and make it work better.
Yeah, because I think that was one of the things that people were complaining about. PopDuz did a great job with the GNOME, but they wanted it to be more, responsive and faster, and I think they wanted better control of it. So if you rewrite it from scratch, it's pretty much a good thing, and for them, because they can write what they want. But apparently, they're already porting this out to Serpent OS, which is a new one by Ikey Doherty, and a few others. You can download it and try it on different distributions if you want, even the alpha. And they tell you how to do that on the website. So if you're looking for that, by all means, check the show notes or just go to System 76 and you'll see the Cosmos about how to add this to your distro.
Yeah, just be aware it's alpha software with all the cautions that go along with that.
So the next one kind of makes my brain hurt. And
okay.
It's Manjaro is wanting to do an immutable desktop. like the one I'm running right now, which is based on Kino Lite, which is Fedora or Silverblue. They want to make Manjaro immutable. Now, Manjaro is based on Arch, which has always been bleeding edge. Now, there are people who say that, you know, the Manjaro is not Arch and whatever, but it's still based on Arch. So I know they're a little more reserved, but how does an immutable work on Arch? I mean, this doesn't quite make sense. I mean, Fedora or Ubuntu, I can kind of understand, but Arch has always been bleeding edge. You know, as soon as built, it's sent out to you, you know, type of thing. I don't understand.
Yeah. It's kind of like a rolling distro, which is the opposite of an immutable distro.
Yes, it is a rolling distro. Manjaro is kind of like not quite as cutting edge as Arch, even though they're based on Arch and they have access to the AUR, which, you know, with all the bleeding edge stuff. But how's this going to work? I just don't quite understand. And the what are they trying to do? Are they going to stay based on Arch? What do you think? I don't know. I'm losing my mind.
I have no idea. Yeah, I hadn't heard this one, and now that you mentioned it, it kind of makes my head hurt too. How do they get? They're going to have to rewrite Manjaro from scratch to make it immutable. I don't know. Maybe they'll rebase it on something else.
I don't. No, all I know is that I was just sitting there going, this makes no sense to me. How does this work? But then
we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, but my brain is hurting on this one because it's like, how do you make Arch a rolling bleeding edge repo into immutable? I just don't get it. But anyway,
I don't get it either.
I'm just throw it out there because I want to see if it hurts your brain like it hurt mine.
Yep, it definitely did. So moving on then.
Okay.
And catching up with Linux Mint. Linux Mint 22 released back in July, on July 25th of 2024. And here is the latest information from Linux Mint's website. Linux Mint 22 is a long-term support release, which will be supported until 2029. It comes with updated software and brings refinements and many new features to make your desktop even more comfortable to use. System requirements are 2 gigabytes of RAM, and 4 gigabytes is recommended for a comfortable usage, 20 gigabytes of disk space, 100 gigabytes are recommended, and 1024 by 768 resolution. On lower resolutions, you'll have to press the Alt key to drag windows around using the mouse if they don't fit in the screen. And if you're using less than 1024 by 768 resolution, it's not going to fit on the screen. But if you look at those system requirements, those are the lowest system requirements of a major distribution I have seen, and they haven't really, the minimum hasn't really changed in years.
No.
I'm amazed.
I'm amazed. So, you know, we both like Cinnamon desktop.
Yeah.
So I actually love what they did with this Linux Mint. Now, just first off, this runs on my oldest laptop. Like it's a new, it makes it feel like it's brand new. It runs perfectly on the i5 with 4 gigabytes of RAM. It's just like a speed demon. And, it only has a little small, I think like a 240 gigabyte drive. It's tiny, but it's an old business machine, but it runs great. It makes it feel like, you know, it's super super fast.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I put it on my oldest computer, which I think is a Celeron class processor, and it works just fine. It's not a speed daemon, and it probably works just as fast as it did when it was new, which is slow by today's standards, but it works fine.
Yeah, so I am very impressed. I actually have been using this as my daily driver with my little laptop. You know, I've been carrying it with me.
Mm. Yep.
Just because my big gaming laptop is 7 pounds. Actually, more like 9 pounds. But this little work.
you gotta wear a back brace if you put it in the back.
Yeah. But the little small 14-inch one I have here is runs really, really well with it. And so I've been carrying it. It's like maybe 2 pounds, you know, so it's a lot different. So it's been doing everything I want. And but I just can't get over that they've managed to put so much into the Linux Mint. And I'm really wanting to go ahead and put it back on my big gaming machine, to see how it would run. Linux Mint was always one of the ones that would work, made my video card work really, really well, and never had an issue with it. So that being said, they really got it dialed in. But one thing that they did differently is they, and I kind of agree with them, is that you can still use snaps, but you have to put the smart support back in. They took it out and put Flatpak support in, and they also changed how, if it's not a verified Flatpak, that you won't see it by default. You can turn it on and see it. And some of them you would have to, but it's going to give you a warning saying this hasn't been verified or the publisher. And I think that's good for a new user, so you won't go out and be installing stuff that you really shouldn't until you know a little bit more. So, but it's there. You can turn it back on if you want, and they tell you how to do it. It's like a drop-down menu. So I think they did a really good job with this, and this I highly recommend it to anybody that's coming from Windows. It just works. I think you use Cinnamon now too, don't you?
I do. I use Ubuntu Cinnamon, and I would still recommend Linux Mint over Ubuntu Cinnamon for a brand new user, simply because Linux Mint has everything polished. Ubuntu Cinnamon is getting there, but there's still a few things that could really baffle somebody who has not used Linux before. For somebody who's used any distribution for Linux for any length of time, it's really straightforward. But for a brand new user, Linux Mint has it hands down over just about anything else. I think Ubuntu Mate and Linux Mint are probably still my best two recommendations. I haven't used Ubuntu Mate, quite honestly, in a while, so I'm assuming things are still working just fine there, but I will get back to them. I use them on in a virtual machine, so it's not that I don't, you know, keep tabs on what's going on there, but I don't use it day to day like I did before.
The one thing that I just want to point out is, Linux Mint has a super new user start guide. If you follow that right down, by the time you reach the bottom, you've updated it, you've installed all your programs, you've set up your backups, you've turned on your firewall, you've adjusted your color. I mean, it walks you through it. There's not many that do that so well.
Yeah, and even Ubuntu Mate had a great welcome screen that was a snap, and they have deprecated that. They don't provide, it's still available, but it's a bit, you know, it's not provided by default, and I think that was a big loss for Ubuntu Mate.
Yeah, I think the setup is for new users is great, and also I like the fact that, you know, Ubuntu Mate does it too, but they don't, you know, if you can look at Mint now in Mint 3 versions ago, and nothing's going to have be so different that you can't figure out what's going on. They keep it lean, mean, and basically the same. They do make changes, but most of it's behind the scenes. So that being said, if you want something that's going to just work, and I'd have to say Linux Mint is probably that one that you want to give your anybody that wants a Linux but doesn't know a lot about computers or coming from Windows, this is the one for you. And you can use it as a daily driver, which a lot of us do. So, hey.
Yeah.
So, this other one is Windows security update breaks dual boot Linux system. And this one actually might affect our users. I heard about this, but then I read the article on It's False, and it has links that can help you repair this if it causes you issues. But in a nutshell, there were some old grub bootloaders, I guess, that had not been patched. And so I'm just pointing to say, remember to update, guys. But apparently it had a CV of like 8.8. A CV means has severity. It goes up to 10. But it's been out there for 2 years. But apparently there's some of maybe the smaller distros were still using the older grub. Or someone had installed a system long ago and never updated to grub. You know, just never bothered to. That when Microsoft said, well, we're just going to patch it, it wasn't supposed to really affect dual boot, but it did. So, yeah, that's Microsoft for you. Let's break it. But it was, you know, they were trying to do something good, but they kind of borked it, and that's kind of their MO. But anyway, what do you think?
Yeah, so just to add a little bit more color to this, Microsoft is maybe surprisingly a big contributor to the Linux kernel and to open source software. They heart Linux, as you know. As a result, this is something that they did to, like you said, try to improve things, and they screwed it up. So hopefully by the time this episode comes out, that whole thing is behind us and they've got the right keys in the right place, and you know, things are signed properly and grub works again. But in the meantime, you really should go to that It's FOSS article if this is affecting you. So, and if you're interested in reading more details about the security issue, there's a link in the show notes to CVE-2022-2601, which is the official number of the CVE for the issue. Apparently, from back in 2022, it was recorded as a CVE, and obviously, it had been around for a while before that. So,
yeah,
there you go. Good luck. I no longer dual boot anything. It's just too much of a hassle. So
yeah,
I'll just use Linux 100% of the time. And if I need to use Windows, I'll try to avoid it. And if I still can't avoid it, I'll find another way of trying to avoid it.
So okay.
I think I've said in the past, if it's not software that's written for use in Linux, I probably don't need to use it.
I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, Google loses antitrust case over search. And the Cliff's Notes version of this, or for our folks in Canada, the Cole's Notes version, is Google used its vast resources and made it hard or next to impossible for other companies to get into the search market. At least that's the accusation.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think this is really happening? Google blocking other competitors? Really?
Well, apparently they lost the case because they basically are paying basically Apple billions of dollars to use the search. to make sure that that's their default search engine on their phones and on their browsers in Safari. And they've been doing those kind of sweetheart deals for a while. But another thing is that they also hand Firefox, or Mozilla, the people that make Firefox, one of our browsers that we use a lot, they give them over 80% of their money. they get like $420 million from Google to continue making the browser. But if you go to, when you open it up, their default search engine is Google. So, they're definitely getting touching all the corners. So basically, say that's anti-competitive, and whether you believe it or not, that's fine. But what I do want to say is, what happens when that money stops? Because if they can't continue doing that, what's going to happen to the money they pay Mozilla?
Yeah, exactly. And I do believe it. I was being sarcastic. Oh. But basically, they were paying these organizations to provide Google as their default search engine so that when 80% of the time people who install something, they never change it from the defaults. Mm-hmm. Well, Google gets all the money from all the searches. And so there you go. Or from all the ads that people click on when they go to the searches. That's probably a better way to put it. So yeah, it's kind of worrisome if now that they've lost that antitrust case, mm-hmm. are they going to stop providing money for these people? Certainly they can't do the quid pro quo sort of thing. We'll pay you money if you make it the default. We'll see.
But I just want to, it's like, why would you let Google be 80% of your money, okay? And if they've been paying them for years, what are they doing with that 400 and whatever million dollars they're getting every year? They should have one hell of a good browser.
Yeah. Some very good office parties, maybe.
Well, they have like 7,000 people. So I'm just saying...
Wow.
So let's do this.
Yeah.
Here it is, Google. Pay Larry and myself $200 million, and we guarantee you in 1 year we'll have the best browser you ever want to see.
It may look a lot like an open source browser that might already be made, and it might actually be a fork. But yeah, we can do that.
Hey, Larry, all we're going to do is hire some developers to make before Firefox. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
And
we'll take $100 million for ourselves. Okay. They'll never know. Oh, wait a minute. We're recording this. That. Never mind. Seriously. If they, you kind of wonder, that's a lot of money they've been paying people. Apple won't need the money. It doesn't, that's probably just a drop in their bank account. They're a $1 trillion company. But, if Google relies on 80% of that, that's kind of a bad thing. It's like they're going to have to figure out some way to make some money.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a big payday going bye-bye. Yes.
Exactly. So let's see what happens as a result of this. The good news is we have other options besides, Firefox and Mozilla-based browsers like, Chrome. But who makes Chrome?
Google. And Chromium.
And how many of the other browsers that are available are actually based on Chrome?
All of them?
Most of them, yeah. I was doing a benefit of the doubt.
How about this? We could use the old Mosaic. It's still available.
Oh, good. Yes, we can do that.
It probably won't do anything, but hey, okay. Anyway, we're being
silly.
Maybe
we could go back to some text-based browsers.
That works.
The graphics,
who needs those silly pictures? All right.
Anyway. Okay, so that's it. Us catching up on current events, not so current by the time you read this, but
hopefully
interesting nonetheless. Hopefully that you get our perspective on things, even though it's a little slanted and skewed and a little off base. But
us,
there you go,
skewed.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how you think that. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I think we can wrap up now. And let's say our next episode is going to be listener feedback. Let's just take a wild guess. That's what we're going to do. And until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.